commissioner at FFC, commissioner of the FCC, acting at EG, senior officials, any entities in attendance, the office of the AG, RTC, Mr. Flogler, is here in full force with the team, the stakeholders and everyone else. We wish to declare the meeting open. You would know that this is the second day running. We started yesterday with our series of meetings. I am just going to request that we don't have people interface immediately in front of the podium, if you like, throughout the duration of the session. Yesterday we dealt with the reports from the ITB. And the AG, obviously, thank you. And we ask those who could afford to remain to please remain, because the continuation. And yesterday we had the full attendance of the Honourable Minister, the 2DM, just to witness the proceedings and to render themselves available for any questions that the committee could have preferred to. Refer to them, and thank you once again, Minister, for your patience yesterday. And today, we proceed in that same fashion. We'll do some quick introductions, because we do not always interface with the bodies like the FFC. It's a privilege of once in a decade or once in a, so we will just require before they present that they make the relevant introduction. Perhaps any other presentation. In terms of the structure of our program for the day, the 14th item is closure. That should be at some time at about 10 p.m. or so. But depending how economical we are with time, we can try and fast track that item to come much, much earlier. There's quite a number of intervening items before item 14, but I just wish to indicate the key presentations that will be discussed. The FFC Financial and Fiscal Commission, and then the department, acting Honorable Minister and the acting DG as well. The Commission on Restitution of Land Rights, CLCC, is in attendance. I see the department twice. That should be on CPA. The other one. Right. In terms of the sequence, after the FFC, in terms of the presentations, we'll then have the department on CPA. And then we'll have CR, LR, and then we'll have the department in terms of the annual report. I will be doing consultations to really see how much fitting that sequence is. If there are any changes, then honorable members and ladies and gentlemen can then expect adjustments accordingly. Yes. And once again, just to make an indication, tomorrow being the final day in the week for the committee sitting, we'll then be dealing with the introduction of the private members bill on the reopening of restitution, so to speak. That will be tomorrow. But we'll make an announcement thereon towards the end of this session. For now, that is that. Maybe we can just entertain apologies if there are any committee secretaries.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Good morning, Minister and Dean. Good morning, colleagues. I've got an apology from MP Mashabela. She is engaged somewhere. And MP Linda is out of town. Thank you very much.
You're talking the context of the 10 ones, nothing. Oh, they return. They will have to bear that she will return on.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Minister, Deputy Minister. Fortunately, I will leave at about in an hour's time. I'm going to make a trip down to Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Further apologies. Thank you. That's noted, Honourable Speaker. My DM. Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson. I just want to request to leave the meeting at 12 and to travel to present for the document. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable GM, Candidate Monsieur Khodamin. Thank you. Further apologies? No apologies. Thank you very much. That is the set of apologies. That's no change. As and when the time arrives, the Honorable Kintane, you will then see which daughter you will. you will close the door on your way out. Without wasting further time, colleagues, let's allow the FFC to do their presentation. Thank you. Over to yourselves. You might. Sorry, before that. Age might be catching up. So, thank you. FSC, over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. Morning, Minister and Deputy Minister. I'm Professor Daniel Plykes, and I'm the Chairperson of the Finance and Fiscal Commission. And I brought with me the staff that focuses on rural development and land reform. Next to me is Dr. Nkululi Mube. Behind me is Sasha Peters and Dr. Ramos Mabugu. On the other side, I've got our Commission Secretary, Nsuya. Can you put up your hands? Nsuya Taura Maharaj. And we've got Henry Ekstein as the Parliamentary Liaison Officer. And then I promise I'll my child not introduce her because fathers are parents too, so I had to bring her along because there's no way to look after my daughter sitting there looking like.
Why are you on the floor, Prof? I'm particular about these introductions because there's nothing as embarrassing like yesterday. One lady from the office of the AG KZN says she's Zuma. And then during break, she comes to say she is Guterres. I'm the one who had to run with a regret and apology whole day. And I re-looked the program on 4-8 last night. I had a say she is Zuma. So I'm very particular about introductions because people tend to play around and people use first names, and it creates confusion. And in fact, Mr. Ekstein, including portfolios, because when you came to introduce yourself here and indicating profits on the way, I asked if you are a commissioner at FFC and you said you are. But
now I hear that you are the PLO for the FFC. I'm very, very particular in touch because whenever I'll be referring to you as the commissioner, then and then it creates, it just makes circus of our work. Like that lady, when you have time, Mr. Flobda, you really clarify. Because you introduced her surname, you said she is Amanda. And I thought I had her to be saying Zuma. So throughout the meeting, I said, Msholozi, whatever, Namala. And then during break, she came to me, she was telling me, and said, no, I'm Mutelezi. And I said, no, look, I'm Xhosa, so the Mutelezi and the Zuma, the Zulu dominant is always easily confused. And now I was sitting with regret, only to find when I re-looked the program later, I was correct. So I'm very particular about introduction, every time, Prof, every time, everything, because I will say Mr. to Dr. Makuku, and then, or I will say Miss or Mrs. And then she will take exception, think that these parliament people are not sensitive to our academic standing. So you have done nothing wrong, Prof, but I'm just saying, but you're not aware that your colleague is the commissioner. You're not
ours. I am ours. Okay, Chairperson, thank you very much. For further clarity, I'm the only commissioner you're present. Today. And I wasn't the chairperson. Chair, we've received a more than 15 applications to appear before committees. Yesterday and today, and we had to arrange our program in such a way that I'd be part of all the portfolio committee meetings. So there's going to be a time that I have to leave to get to human settlement, but Dr. Nube and Ms. Sasa Peters, who are senior researchers, will be here. Both of them are researchers and the senior FFC, because they work on these things. And the Commission Secretary will be with him. We can't see all the other committees, but we need to do. There's a point that you make, Honourable Chairperson, and I made it for the last couple of committees that we've attended. I think in many ways, your committee and the others are doing a disservice to yourselves by not inviting us to your meetings or calling on us. Because last year, we did a submission on the Division of Revenue which focuses very sharply on rural rurality and rural development, where we made definitive recommendations in the how the Division of Revenue should focus on the rurality and the rural development, with the idea that there's a fast migration happening. Rural development are lagging, rural areas are lagging behind, and it needs to be social and economic in there, social and physical infrastructure investment in rural areas. So before I forget it, I would like to put an open invitation to you that you call on the Commission to advise you at different matters that you would like to deal with, because we can give you our independent constitutional mandated opinion, which is different from others. And similarly, I want to take the opportunity, Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister, that I think it is also useful that you consider inviting the Commission to come and brief you. And the reason why we're doing that is that there's lots of what we call agency, principal-agent relations, and the principal know less than what the agents know. And it's an acceptable, not an acceptable proper practice, but that's what's happening. Your staff knows more than you because they're on the ground and they interact with many things. And sometimes we're actually helping to make sure that the principals have the necessary information, knowledge to be able to make appropriate decisions that can be important to the public. And, in this particular, looking at historic disadvantage. Because sometimes we forget that we've got a Gini coefficient, which is the measure of inequality, of 0.68. Now, we came down from a 0.72, but that has nothing to celebrate about. We are, the inequalities in South Africa are extremely harsh. It continues from the apartheid days and still sitting with us. And I guess that's probably the approach is to shifting from the approach from the structural NDP to looking at what does radical transformation mean in South Africa. Moreover, we got stubborn poverty. And there are interventions that needs to be made, especially in the rural areas. But when we look through year-on-year policy statements made by the cabinet, by the minister, and other ministers, because we're also looking at the interlink, what we call the collateral effect, that certain functional areas have on, for instance, rural development. So your staff, minister, and honourable members, that you repeat the briefing that you get, will might be very focused on just the rural geographic space, but we could help you to think about, so what happens there around health issues? What happens on education? What happens around economic activities? And what happens on other methods of social infrastructure? We did a study on the evictions of people from farms and that. Now some of that stuff doesn't really get through because we don't get the opportunity to brief. And when I met with the president for around 2 hours, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, the president wasn't aware that we've made a submission last year on the Division of Revenue and Rural Development and Land Reform questions. Now, if that's the case, then it's conceivable that the stuff just doesn't follow through to where it should be. And and these are the things that since the 1st of July when I was appointed, because I've been serving as a commissioner for 3 years, and I've been saying that we need to find a different way of forcing strategic communication because of in the interest of the South African public. So I'm raising that as part of the context so that going forward, it shouldn't be a problem for the minister and deputy minister, the chairperson, and the other chairpersons to contact and ask. If you give us sufficient time, notice, we will bring substantive information to you to help policy making decisions. It might be the same as it might be validating what's happening in your departments, but it might also show here are the weaknesses of what has been recommended to you. And similarly, we did a thorough review of the National Development Plan in relation to rural development. So 2 years ago, we did a submission on infrastructure development with the whole idea of the infrastructure growth. Last year, we did a submission on rural development, rurality and rural development, and this year, we did a submission on urban. So it will be useful to come and talk to you about how these things interconnect. The only reason why we did it separately, because we thought, let's help the executive and also let's help Parliament to focus, because sometimes when we talk about development, the rural communities continues to be marginalized in the discussion. For today's presentation, we're going to talk to you about the role and the function of the Finance and Fiscal Commission, a functional approach to rural development. We're looking at, we're going to give you a background, and then we're going to zero down on the request that Honourable Chairperson that you made with your Honourable Members on the departmental analysis, departmental and entity performance, and then we'll take you into what are the recommendations that we've made last year with regard to rural development for the Division of Revenue. As you know, that the Financial Fiscal Commission is an independent permanent strategy institution established in terms of Section 220 of the Constitution. We function in terms of the Financial Fiscal Act and the Financial Fiscal Amendment Act. Our mandate is to make recommendations, and this is in Chapter 13 of the Constitution or in any national legislation, in particular they were referring to the money bills, the provincial, to parliament and provincial legislatures, municipalities and any other organ of state determined by national legislation. The Commission's focus is primarily on the equitable division of nationally collected revenue among the three spheres of government and any other financial and fiscal matters. So when we do our submission, we look at the legislative provisions, what legislations have been introduced by ministers to parliament, including some policy and programs. The rule is that the legislative obligation is that any legislation that gets introduced, Honourable Chairperson, that has an effect on provincial and national, provincial and local government legislation or mandates has to be costed by the Financial and Fiscal Commission. Or rather, we need to know what's the cost of that, but also we need to be consulted on it. That's the point I needed to make. We need to be consulted on that. So if when the minister introduces legislation that's got an impact on provincial and local government, before it gets to parliament, the Finance and Fiscal Commission is to be consulted on it. There are also estimated decisions that we need, that we look at, meaning the decisions that are made by cabinet, that affect either provincial or local government from a financial and fiscal perspective. What goes for national, goes for the provinces, goes for the municipalities. This includes regulations associated with legislation that may amend or extend such legislation. Sometimes we pick up that new legislation either to an expansion of the mandate of service delivery that needs to happen, or policy, or any form of public goods. In other instances, it's just responsibility to another sphere of government. When that happens, we need to be consulted on it. Our current research strategy focuses on development impacts of the intergovernmental fiscal relations. Just to give you a quick brief, honourable members, that in 2017-18, the one that's focused on rural development, our submission looked at the disparities between regions and how those disparities are able or not able to harness growth potential of rural areas. Our view was that we recommended that government should further strengthen the equity focus of intergovernmental transfers, and in particular for the education and health sectors. If you live in a rural community and you're poor, you will remain poor, because it's only those that come out of it whose families got income assets to pull them out of those areas. And some of those income assets are assets that goes from generation to generation. And that's probably one of the reasons why we are unable to break this. Our response, Minister, that and Deputy Minister, which I'm not sure whether you know about it, but this is the government response that came through for us. The government agreed.
Just through the chair, because you might just let some oversight line.
My apologies, Chair.
In that the principals in the room and the portfolio committee, with due respect, Prof.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for reminding me that. Thank you. So, the government agrees, but there's a need to, where government is saying that it's also exploring the possibility of adding rural focus indicators to the provincial equitable share to further strengthen the equity of the governmental transfers. So, there is an acknowledgement that we need to look at the equitable distribution around that. On progress, government has indicated in its submission on the division of revenue bill and and provincial equitable share that it will be reviewed. There's also the part where we asked the National Treasury to review the framework for allocating agricultural conditional grants to reduce the weight of agriculture and land size, poverty relief, and incorporate factors that are closely aligned to the objectives of the Common Ground. The government agrees with that, and changes have been made in terms of, in an incremental way, to the agriculture ground framework. The recommendation that we've made in that instance is implemented incrementally in Chairperson. In 2017-18, we recommended that government should enhance agricultural productivity by establishing a framework for the implementation, evaluation and monitoring of key agricultural grounds targeted substance and small-scale farmers. Honourable Chairperson and members, the government agreed on it, and a range of agricultural stakeholders, a task team of consisting Department of Rural Development, Land Reform, Department of Agriculture, Forestry, were put together to in particular look at substance and small-scale farmers. We haven't seen any immediate implementation of the recommendation, and it's also not been reflected in the revision of the revenue report of 2017-18. In the additional recommendations made was on CASP and RECAP should be consolidated under one funding program for post-settlement support to emerging and land reform farmers. Because we consider that there's more expertise in the area of agriculture. The government agreed to that the post-settlement support is important, and there's a need to look at the overlapping roles between the different departments that's involved in there, but also clarifying the roles of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry, Fishery, and Rural Development and Land Reform. There's no progress on that because we don't know the limitation of that, and it's not needed within the Division of Labor. Furthermore, we also suggested that there's a need to look at to improve land reform outcomes. There was no response to that particular recommendation, and our understanding is that the National Treasury indicated that we need to get our response from the Department of Rural and Land Reform and Rural Development. So we are waiting on that one. Implementation gaps in the land reform program should be addressed through reprioritized funding from existing baselines. There was no response to that recommendation. The role of municipalities in supporting land reform beneficiaries should be clarified. It's because we think, as we all would consistently argue, that municipalities are the coal face of delivery, so there is a role to be played. So there's a need to think about what is that role. Chairperson, with your permission, I would like to ask Dr. Nube and followed by Ms. Sasa Peters to take your first question. Thank you,
Honourable Chair. I would like to thank my apologies to our development and the thinking within the Commission. The main focus here is that the rural economy is no longer just the farm economy. It is more important than being a farm economy. The role of agriculture is the engine. Thank you. The role of agriculture as the engine of growth within rural areas is declining. We all know that. But rural development has evolved over time to focus on space-based intervention and diversified economic activities. While we notice that growth in agriculture output has poverty-reducing effects, there are these non-farm effects which are very, or non-farm sectors which are very, very powerful instruments for reducing poverty and inequality, especially in rural areas. So the Commission thinks that a multifunctional policy approach is needed to attain rural development, where we look at different sectors, different departments in a very multifunctional approach. So a multifunctional approach will also be required, especially when it comes to the budgeting aspect. So look at all these different aspects. At the present moment, we see that the consolidated government budget still lumps agriculture and rural development functions together, which reinforces the prevailing narrow interpretation of rural development. If you look at that table before, we see that at the bottom there, there's agriculture, rural development, and land reform. It lumps together, but really ignores other functions which are very important for rural development. And if you look at rural development, there are other key functions in government that will constitute aspects of rural development, such as education, as Prof has mentioned, health, roads, housing, agriculture, regional planning and development, environmental protection. Those are key aspects of rural development, which really, if we look at the current approach, which focuses narrowly on rural development, is constrained. So we suggest a full functional approach to rural development, which implies that these functions need to be properly monitored and well coordinated. Coordination is very, very key as I come towards the end of this. Then the following slides really talk to some background issues about rural development, about agriculture. Rural areas account for about 80% of the land, and they are very, very important demographically, economically, and even politically. Rural areas are key. They are home to 38% of the population. If you look at 2001, it was 43%. There is a decline, gradual decline in the population in rural areas, and there are implications for that. So a significant proportion of the poor live in rural areas. If you look at more than two-thirds of rural dwellers lived in poverty compared to a third in urban areas. There is more poverty. And if you look at the table below, it shows different measures of poverty. And comparing rural and urban, you can see the disparities there in the rural areas. Poor people in rural areas are not only further away from the poverty line or average, but the poorest of the poor are significantly worse off than in urban areas. That's what that table tells us. Then you look at other challenges rural people face, backlogs. If you look at the diagram below there, see at the far right, to my far right, you find the rural municipalities there. Those are the backlogs which are higher than in any other category of municipalities. So they face that particular challenge. Deficits also are noticed in housing, backlogs, health disparities, insufficient skills, and educational performance, as well as the aging population in rural areas. That's what characterizes the rural areas. So there are policy considerations with that particular, which go with that particular background.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Before Dr. Mungu will proceed, Prof, like the situation arose yesterday about a document reaching committee and about what time. To a great extent, we found that in the internal parliamentary protocol affects that in the sense that the document is submitted via certain point and circulation via the other point and so forth, so that ultimately the committee, the one that I was alluding to as being principal earlier, so that ultimately the committee, the document reaches at an awkward period. Reverend Stokely talked about
submit in black and white, because it makes sense. I think all of the traveling also raised the point yesterday that the color enhances the emphasis, the focus, everything. And now the members are in black and white. They didn't call it, they don't belong to the same political party, but and you are not in attendance yesterday, but they raised exactly the same principle. So you know, is there, can you relate? Can you relate? Before I make some determination or proposal, but let me just get your response. I drew the background delivery to you. Probably, Dr.
Yeah. Chair, thank you very much. The same issue also came up in the other two committees yesterday. The rural development report, we only got from Parliament by Friday evening, Saturday. So that's the first thing, that's a knock-on effect on that. So normally, to be able to submit, we needed to get the annual report so that we can do an analysis of the annual report. So that's part of the rugby ball, I think. I think soccer probably, because I understand soccer better. So that's the passing at that eventually happened. So we only got the reports on Saturday, on your one. That's the first thing. The second thing, everything goes, okay, gets late. So this report was sent to you in email color. And this morning I did ask, can we print color? And then our printer also broke it. This is too much. So these things are emailed in color. So if the email version is sent to your members, honorable chairperson, will be in color, but it's a color print. But if the honorable member, I can just send keep mine because the stuff is in my hands.
You like clearing oversight with execution, you do everything, bro. No. Prof, thanks for your humility. I really appreciate it. I am learning a lot, you know. Yeah. I thought when I took you earlier on, I was going to find the professorial argument and thesis, and there you were humble and apologizing, and even now you hear me. Thank you very much for that. And hence I'm going to determine in your favor by persuading members that shall we try and live with the black and white honorable members, please, all of us. I think honorable Christian and like honorable Chabeling yesterday, we're raising it on behalf of us all, and just the standard. And we don't drop the standard. But with this explanation given by Paul, coupled with the slides that are projecting, and if we go to our image with our gadget, it is in color, it's true what Prof is saying. But ordinarily, Prof, for future purposes, I do not know about aspects. I will follow up from the chair as to what made it that you get the report from Parliament on Friday, Saturday. So that you have very little time to start to even work on that, you know. But having said that, we apologize for the logistical inconvenience. On the other part, we will follow up and try and improve, you know. So that, I also understand so that it's better. My nickname is Wenya. Just like the chair, I'm standing on behalf of here, Swedish Wenya. I think we'll proceed with the courtesy of Nate to share with our students. But for the rest of other members, for equity purposes, I'm just persuading that let's use the slides projecting on the screen and let's use our electronic gadget. Honorable Deputy Minister, Michelle.
Chairperson, can we correct something? The due date of the submission of the annual report was Friday.
Okay.
Yes. So there's no one who has missed anything. The due date was on Friday, so we were compliant.
Albom, she also says from the structure that I was born. Thank you very much, DM. It did arise, I just don't want to drag issues on and on, but it did arise yesterday that the due date was the 31st. But Parliament programming, looking at the global other issues, had to push us to sit this week. By next week, what day, we shall then be kind of starting the process of reporting to the House. So I think that's the inconvenience we are all suffering as a consequence. But thanks for clarifying and defending the position, my DM. So that's some totality of fact. I think I do understand from where I sit, but I don't want to clutter the meeting. Shall we just, Dr. Nyombe, invite you to forget about all the discussion and focus on your subject matter? You know, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I was on the policy considerations. We have noted the challenges which the rural space is facing, and government has allocated a big chunk of resources to rural areas. We note that, and that rural provinces are the main beneficiaries of infrastructure conditional grants, and that is the estimate that approximately 60% of total government expenditure is allocated towards fulfilling, towards funding the social wage, which includes a package of free basic services to poor households, and these are in the rural spaces, quite a significant proportion there. And also the National Development Plan identifies key strategies to develop rural areas, especially and enhancing opportunities in rural areas and ensuring food security. There are various job creation strategies through land reform and agriculture development. We have also the creation of security of tenure for communal farmers, especially women, and investment in infrastructure and support services. Despite all these challenges, we see significant moves within government to improve rural spaces. And we have also the Agriculture Policy Action Plan, which was developed to implement the NDP and the new growth path goals, which gives expression to outcomes 4 and outcomes 7. And also, in order to meet NDP targets for poverty reduction, the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation estimates that approximately 400,000 people must graduate out of poverty each year in rural areas. There are also significant differentiations in rural towns and settlement types, which means any rural policy adopting a one-size-fits-all approach is unlikely to be effective. Then, in terms of the sector, what are the challenges? We saw that South Africa was facing the worst drought in 30 years, which resulted in 7 quarters of negative growth in the agricultural sector, so it affected rural communities. Severe drought has eased in several farming regions recently, and there is strong recovery over the past 3 quarters, we've seen that. So despite the improvement, the Commission is of the view that strategies that transition the economy and households should also focus on water. They said water, the country is a water-stressed country, and we need strategies to conserve and harness water resources efficiently. And the other challenge which the sector is facing is on the land reform. Since the 1990s, government has spent a significant amount of resources on land reform, but land reform has had little impact on rural development. It is widely felt that we looked at a study as mentioned last year on rural development, and we found gaps in the funding model, which include the affordable loan funding to support land reform beneficiaries. At present, many beneficiaries are considered too risky to qualify for such funding. And also the Commission has looked at some provinces, we looked at some sites in KZN, Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape, and we found that the land reform program has actually, in some areas, food security has decreased due to failed projects, while only in a small proportion of operational projects food security has improved. We also saw from our study that large production losses in redistributed farms are like all the herbicides are seen, and also there are job losses as a result of decreased cultivated land within land reform areas. And also, lastly, we found that coordination, there's a lack of proper coordination, lack of strong monitoring and coordination, especially in rural areas, which has undermined some of the outcomes. And the Commission is of the view that monitoring the performance of this, or some of the grants which are really supposed to develop rural areas, is very, very weak. And there are other rural programs which are being implemented by government. We need strong monitoring and evaluation of this particular program. So Sasha will take you through the departmental analysis. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. As indicated by my colleague, the next section provides an overview of our analysis on the budget and the spending performance of the department. And the spending in the department is arranged around five programs, with the key service delivery programs being the rural development, restitution and land reform programs. Then there are also a couple of entities that fall under this department, notably the agricultural land holding account. And then the mandate of the department is really geared at ensuring sustainable rural livelihoods, decent work, and continued social and economic advancement for all. Over the 2017 medium-term expenditure framework period, there are six key focus areas that inform the department's activities. They include growing rural economies through the AgriFox initiative, accelerating land reform, recapitalizing and redeveloping redistributed farms, settling land claims, creating opportunities for rural youth, and transforming land tenure. So the resource allocation to this department aims to make an impact across all of those big key focus areas. In terms of allocations to the department, over the 2017 MCS period, we see that in 2017 the department is allocated 10.2 billion, this increases to 10.7 billion in 2018, and finally in 2019 it is projected that the department will receive an allocation of 11.3 billion. Now when we look at the growth of these allocations in real terms, so when we factor in inflation, the department will actually experience a real annual average decline of 2.2% per annum. And what we notice that all three key priority programs, the rural development, restitution and land reform programs, are all projected to decline by over 3% per annum in real terms. Surprisingly, on the other hand, the program that is set to decline the least over the period, and which is not directly related to the core service delivery areas of the department, is the administration program. And this decline is even quite marginal at 0.1%. We note that an amount of 961 million is being set aside over the MTA period to finance the construction of a single campus site for the department's head office. And if this is what is driving the trend that we see with administration actually being spared the big cuts, then the commission would raise whether this expenditure should be really be an immediate priority, particularly given the tight fiscal environment that we find ourselves in. This slide and the figure there shows how the department's budget is divided amongst the five programs. The restitution program receives the largest share of the department's budget, and just over a third of the total allocation. And this allocation to this program is mostly used to settle land claims. We note that a recent constitutional court judgment found that the department first has to settle all claims lodged prior to 1998 before it can start processing the new claims. And the Commission would advise that specifically for purposes of oversight, that perhaps the department be given a cut-off date by which which these old claims or backlogs should be settled. We also note that whilst the Rural Development and Land Reform programs are central to the mandate of the department, the proportion of the budget allocated to these programs has decreased slightly. So we see in that figure that the share allocated to the rural development program drops from 19% to 18%, the share to the land reform drops from 28% to 26%, and these slight declines happen alongside a 2% increase in the share of the budget allocated to the administration program. This slide shows the department's spending over the medium-term expenditure framework period, but now by economic classification items. And what we see is that the bulk of the department's budget is spent via transfers and subsidies. And this item is projected to show a real annual average decline of 2.5%. And this is largely as a result of the slowdown in allocations to the department's biggest entity, the agricultural land holdings account. Then in line with government-wide efforts to contain the public sector wage bill, we note that allocations in respect of compensation to employees are set to decline in real terms over the 2017-18 period. We do note that the decline is 0.6%, which is quite a bit smaller when compared to other spending categories like transfers and subsidies, goods and services, etc. This figure shows that, again, just the proportional allocation of the department's budget by economic classification. So we see there that transfers and subsidies account for 2/3 of the department's spending, and this is mainly through transfers to households in respect of destitution claims, but also transfers to the entities. The notable entity there is the agricultural land holdings account. We note that one of the key initiatives of the department, the One Household, One Hectare initiative, has been funded via this entity. And one area where there is a bit of or lack of clarity is whether the department is loaning the land to beneficiaries, as happened previously, or if the land is being dispersed to poor households with title deeds. Previously, the commission had raised concern around if the farmland is transferred on a loan basis only, households may be reluctant to invest in the land because of insecure tenure. We've provided two slides. Next slide, please. We've just provided two slides to show the allocations to the department's big entities. That slide indicates that, mimicking the overall performance of the department, allocations to entities are set to decline over the 2017-18 period, and a very significant real annual average decline of 17% projected for the agricultural land holding account. We note that the reduced allocation to that entity is as a result of cabinet-approved reductions. Given that it has important initiatives like the One Farm initiative that falls under this program, it obviously has implications for sustainably funding and rolling out these two programs. Then the next slide just graphically illustrates the real allocation to the entities over a period and illustrates how the allocations are declining, particularly for the agricultural land holding account. For those who are looking at it in black and white, it's the figure at the bottom that dropped. NZG, I'm not sure if my chairperson wants to add anything.
Check. Thank you. I was afraid if I had to speak here. In conclusion, I think One of the things that we want to recommend in this in the rural land reform environment is that there's a need to strengthen monitoring and coordination function, especially on those areas that we've mentioned in our submission. We also have a view that there's a need to strengthen support and also incentives, provide incentives to provide for land reform for farms to become more viable enterprises. The other is that we think strongly that land reform could play a very strong role in alleviating rural poverty and inequality over medium to long term period. Honourable Chair members, when we did our presentation in Limpopo, one of the key questions that was asked by the speaker and the honourable members there was, and I think it's important that I also repeat that question to you, which they asked us, is cooperatives the best way we have to inject rural economies? Is that the only solution that we have, cooperatives in rural areas? Are there no other ways that we can start thinking creatively around how do we stimulate rural development given at the level where our people start in rural areas? We further want to conclude by saying to improve land reform outcomes, coordination is required between the different departments. And it should especially solidify and strengthen policy and implementation. We would like to reiterate our previous recommendation that the CAPS and the recapitalization program should be consolidated under one funding program for post-settlement support to emerging and land reform farmers, as it will be able to consolidate more expertise in the area of agriculture. Chairperson, that concludes our presentation to you. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Prof. Plagiat and the Commission for the presentation. You, I think it's clear, other than the header of the black and white, which I think is the header of Parliament. Yesterday I did critique something about Parliament. The second critique now I'm going to make is about this black and white. Yesterday, today, and so forth, it's black and white. I've noted Honourable Walters. In the committee, we've been having this practice of inviting you when we do annual report and about to do the what we call the budget adjustments and so forth. Last year, you were here on the 19th of the 10th. Yeah. But in your comments, you were then suggesting that maybe we're not making optimal use of your good cells. So maybe that's suggesting that we should have you more than once. Maybe if it's semesterly or quarterly. And yeah, we have noted that, and it's absolutely very, very impressive. People just don't open up themselves to do work and to be offset. I make this up in making my observation. People are just not prepared. People are just complying, what you may wish to call malicious compliance. People just for the sake of, you know. So thank you very much for opening up. We'll try and make best use of you. I know I have a long history also at Provincial Association. I know that you will come once in 2 years or so in the UK. So open up yourself throughout the country and let's see. But it will help because your reflections are very much grounded than what some of the things that one has really seen everywhere else. So it could help that you plug into some space and you influence the direction of things. So just responding to your issue about we doing disservice by we've hitherto been inviting you once per annum during this time, but we have noted your point. I will now allow honorable members to interact. Honorable Sultana, you had indicated that you would love to be excused, so I'll start with you because of that. I do not know if you will live long enough to see the responses. No, not the lifetime, but to hear and see the responses. I will then take after you, Honorable Walter, Honorable Robertson, Dadwethu, Yilindamasekhaya, Jolingo, Namhlanje Sathule, Honorable Makatha, Honorable Mandela, and then the last person. Thank you. So we're fielding questions now, Prof and your team. Please feel free to note and to interact. I guess we have about 30 minutes in all. Honorable Sultan, you can shoot them.
Oh, thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the Commission for the intervention. It really does open our eyes in the sense that it takes us, it takes our focus onto a different angle. We always look at the department just from a 90 degree angle straight, and today we've got to look at another, at the department's, at the department's progress from a different angle. My first question is based on the on your statement on slide 8 that the role of agriculture as engine of growth within the rural provinces is declining. What are the apparent reasons, you know, for that, besides the situation with water as well as possibly poor monitoring? What are the factors that you find there? This question is critical in the sense that I guess from time to time the department does transfer to provinces and you want to keep on, you know, dumping money on a dead cause, so to speak. Now, the second question is around your statement to the effect that, you know, where the municipality's role in rural development, so to speak, does not appear to be crisply defined. Why would that? Would you make that kind of statement? Has your research shown you that? Rephrase my question. If you have done enough research to this effect, and hence you're making the statement, what have you found to be the reasons for this apparent lack of involvement or reasonably low involvement of municipalities in rural development? Is it their capacity or what is it? Or is it about separation of powers between the different strata of government like national, province and local government? I recall a time when I was working for Tambo, a development agency there called Ndinga. It always looked like, you know, when Ndinga had to beg, as it were, municipality to give it a budget for its own programs that have been initiated by the district municipality itself. And when I left, a budget, which used to be over 160, had come down to about 60 million. And that was not due to Ndinga not performing, but it was a political decision, you know, at municipal level. That's why I want to know in this case, you know, what is the situation? And now you find that a lot of those agricultural officers which used to work for Ndinga as agricultural qualified, you know, personnel, now their function is to distribute water or manage water programs. So this becomes a critical question as to why municipalities, the municipal role in this program appears, you know, to be so clearly defined. And lastly, you say the FFC has to be consulted in the process of, you know, making legislation. We appreciate that. Now, what would be your contribution in that? I understand the process of evaluating as to whether, asking questions like whether a given piece of legislation can be implemented from a financial perspective, whether a department, you know, would make the, you know, the necessary adjustments. But besides that, what would be your role, you know, in that respect? That's my input check. I will leave right away now, but I will be looking for answers to our secretary. She normally does not disappoint. Thank you very much. I'm so sorry that I've got to leave. I always appreciate the sessions with the FFC because of this other angle that they take us through. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, I'm very careful after your Congress in the Eastern Cape to disagree with you. Please bear with me. I think this is a highly significant, and I think that's the institutional role of the Commission as well to provide that. I think it's a highly significant analysis that we have here. Firstly, at a structural level, I think it points to a serious silo problem across government, and I think this is a transversal department. You know, I can imagine it causes frustration within the department with the political leadership if you expected to deliver on things that are you're massively dependent on other departments as well. So I think I fully support the fact that it's clearly highlighted here. You can't have rural development and you essentially deal only with a part of agriculture. So there's a transversal issue here. I think we need to very seriously grapple with those recommendations. I'll come back to that as well. I think we're also financial facts indicating, if you look at it from a high level, we're not getting bang for our buck in terms of making the differences that we want to make as a department. And I think there's also a long-term decline in funding, which contradicts the overall governmental priorities in terms of rural transformation, rural change. Then we might have some disagreements as to how that can be achieved, but I don't think we disagree in this committee as to the fact that it should be achieved. So there's a serious long-term problem which suggests to me it's not going to get better, which means that you either need to increase the funding, which I don't think is necessarily the issue. We would all like to have more funding, but it's also pointless to increase funding if you don't do things better. So I think it refers to a problem in the business model that's been used up until now. Even if you increase the funding, your results are not going to change because it's not making the difference in food security and that we would like to see. I also appreciate the fact that it's highlighting the issue of title deeds or long-term tenure and the impact it has on the success of a successful rural development. And I think an important point here is we are not talking about the investment of wealthy, you know, big capitalists or companies. We're talking of the people themselves who don't want to participate because of the access to financing, access to markets that's implied. So there's an unresolved issue there in terms of the institution of property ownership that has been used. I also appreciate the fact that there was the point made about cooperatives and whether it's a viable business model. There's a lot of literature there around it, but certainly as a start-up model for a new business, first getting into a economic sector, there's serious, I believe the term that was used, mortality rates of cooperatives in place. There are lots of models of successful cooperative arrangements of enterprises that are already successful, up and running, but as a start-up model, as an entry-level model, serious concerns can be raised. So, Chair, I would actually like to raise a question to the committee here. There's one or two things I disagree with in terms of the presentation as well. But are we going to take these recommendations, work through it as a committee, and come up with committee recommendations of our own? What is the status of these recommendations, and what are we going to in fact do with it? Thanks.
Honourable Makaka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we welcome to the FS presentation. Financial and fiscal highlighted. Through you, Chair. As far as you know, is there any equality in the distribution of income? I'll cite an example of the share in total expenditure for education started to increase as a result of the other schools, as well as infrastructure deficiency, as you have mentioned, that in your sectoral challenges. Now, the land issue. Surely there's going to be an unrest in the country. I agree with you with increase to access to basic services. My second question, Chairperson, is that the largest share of government expenditure in South Africa goes towards the remuneration of employees. What will be your recommendation to that, according to the data and your constitutional mandate? Thank you.
Thank you, Makasa. If you want to raise something, no bother. If you don't want, you can make a follow-up later. You have the whole thing with me here.
Thank you, Chair, but I thought we don't have the privilege of having Professor without our own list. Thank you, Chair. Thank you. I must welcome and thank Professor Parley's and his team for the excellent presentation, Chair. Very thought-provoking recommendations made, in particular to government, and some of it government still has to come back to Chair. The one recommendation that I'm hoping that a minister who's the political head of this department will indeed embrace is the role of municipalities in supporting land reform, Chair. I know our Honourable Fultani would now, and yourself would always argue the thing about unfunded mandates. That has always been the concern of municipalities. But the reality is, every single grain of sand in this country is located in a municipality, because we have wall-to-wall municipalities. So indeed, there is a role, a better role that they certainly should play in. And perhaps, Prof, you should think about it a little bit more and come up with very, very concrete suggestions to government in terms of exactly how and what role municipalities should play in advancing and accelerating land reform. Chair, I would indeed note the point that has been made with regard to the recovery following the drought. You know, the fact that we are now out of a technical recession primarily because of the growth in the agricultural sector, Chair. But what we would have wanted to hear also from you, Professor, is to see whether the DPME's estimate of approximately taking 400,000 people annually out of poverty, how have we done in respect of that? Have we met 50% one quarter, or have we surpassed that estimate? Chair, that would have been a very, and I'm raising it because you are primarily a research institution, and certainly you have the capacity and capability to indeed assist us very, very clearly.
so much, Honorable Mandela. I think, Prof, your team, you've been noting the interactive questions from the Honorable members. I don't know if I may just add some few. What are your observations on the budget of rural development and land reform versus the total the fiscus, if you like, in your view? You've given a startling statistic, and you know, our country is 80% rural, 38% of the population is out there in rural areas with two-thirds poverty. Chunk of poverty is out there in rural areas, and so forth, all the tools you actually gave, you know. So what's your take in relation to the budget of the department? Like Honorable Walter has said, every other department and every other attack portfolio committee end up wanting to advocate for their budget increase, and we should perhaps try and stay away from that temptation. But given the statistics that you have just shared, you know, how do you look at it? I'll make a very, because this is public, I know also my colleagues across the spectrum and my colleagues across the world will catch this. Everyone cries land. It's such a big issue. Such a big issue. Everyone, even the ruling party, is talking between options, expropriate without or expropriate with, just and equitable. And somewhere the land is such a hot issue in the country. Now, what does the budget talk to that? If I say, and you agree with me, that the budget for restitution stands at about 2 billion in the whole year, inclusive of everything, that 2 billion. And at that rate, you're likely going to take 150, 154 years, by some, not my wisdom, by some wisdom of the Human Sciences Research Council that came the other year here. Yeah, it was going to take us about 100 and something years at the current pace. So have you really applied your mind to that? If the crisis at SAA, now I'm talking practical things, I'm a politician, I'm supposed to do that, and I've been in politics long enough, even if I'm chased now, I'll just, you know. SAA has a crisis, 1-2, then there's a 3 billion bailout. big land crisis in the country, 1-2-3, up to 100, there's no bailout. Instead, you are demonstrating to us, I think correctly so, that in fact, in real terms, there's 2.2% budget decline. But out there, there's a cry about land, there's a cry about land reform. People are just, the land question. I was at National Policy Conference that was projected, in fact, openly. So I'm not talking inside information here. It was projected, everyone could see. It was dominated by the question of land. The question of land is just top priority out there in the public space. But do you find it resonating with the budget at present? I made an example, a restitution commission at 2 billion. I could say right across the department, in fact, even rural development program, three or whatever, even rural development itself, despite all these challenges, has a very meager budget. I can point them to three bridges that are broken in rural area. They would have to take 5 years to reach there, not because they don't want, but because of the limitation of resources, you know. So I'm just checking with the FFC. Doctor, I'm super challenging. I don't think. You must be disturbed by the professor now, Doctor Mingo. We also, or not Doctor Mingo, sorry, Editor Mingo now, how do I apologize? Chocolate or something? Because I called your name instead of who missed Peter. Doctor, thank you, sir. I've confused the names as the introduction of that. I write names down because I just don't want to say something wrong to someone else. Yeah. Thanks, Doctor. So I think, Prof, you captured that, or you're busy discussing that anyway, when I'm saying it's technical. You're busy discussing this. Hue and cry about lens.
budget is not talking to them. One each at FAA, 2 billion, boom, come. That's Friday. I'm told. But like I say, I put my head on the floor when I go this year. I'm not a coward, too. So, how do we reconcile this? You are the gurus dealing with this on a day-to-day basis to make recommendations, scientific and consistent, coherent ones. So, please, can you deal with that issue in your response? The other Bildane has raised a question, but it's similar to the question about that the rural economy is not necessarily agriculture. He seems to be worried that it's shrinking. I seem to be reading you to be saying there are more avenues for building a growing rural economy via a number of tools, right? So I thought you could just clarify that, because if that's the case, all the better, because we're not going to produce all farmers out there in the rural countryside. We must have all sorts of economic development initiatives across there. Yeah. So that would be my other point. But like I'm saying, you can cross-reference in response with the issue about whether rural agriculture should be. But in my view, I would be saying, do you have a model for rural development? You know, what is it? What does it ought to be? And is it well canvassed, be it in the NDP or anywhere else? Can you go to rural communities and put a clear blueprint, this is what you want to see? If you like, I'll just say 100 years down the line, so that I'm not like society. The rural space, what is the development there? How can it be done? Have you bothered to check the budgets of be it in education? Because rural sometimes is transversal. Education, health, sports, I see you don't mention sports, but like me, Prof is a great sports football person, enthusiast. So sports and all, you have not mentioned it when you were talking about rural, the areas of the other sectors and departments. What is the budget and what is the proposition? Can you risk and propose a model to coordinate those? You know, what is the proposition to do that? CASP and RICAP, you talked about CASP, you talked about RICAP and this coming together. What is supposed to be the procedure? Are you mindful, and this is not an argument against, but this is, I don't know, like a router, a car putting, just to alert us as well. Are you mindful that RICAP never had budget? Perhaps you are FFC, so now I can't ask you that question from yourself. But are you mindful of your own fact that RICAP never had budget? RICAP used own creativity by department to top slide. Because as we hear in this term, department over the years realized that no, we restitute these farms and we redistribute this land and people cannot move. What shall we do? Let's rearrange in our own room in such a manner that then there's this support. This is how RICAP came from. So, with the proposition that you have made, which I think largely it makes sense to combine it with CASP in agriculture, which CASP is about small things. I think CASP is hardly a couple of million, it's not even a million. So if you combine that, as it should be, I think I agree. But where will the budget come from? By the way, I've not read to the honourable members. Treasury has declined to come, not declined in negative terms, but in very professional terms. They say, please note that National Treasury briefed Standing Committee on Appropriations and Expenditure. Blah, blah, blah. I just noted that one part. So, as you seek to get CASP and RICAP for RADP, but with RADP having been owned funds by the department, how is it going to take off? What procedures and steps are you proposing? Maybe I've overcanvassed that point. Maybe my question is very, very clear, right?
From what you have said, I would just lament to everyone that probably the budgeting process that we have is far from what I, as an activist, I am a volunteer activist, 32 years now. Budgeting, you projected up to 20-something. So budgeting is not really about, it's not really a people's thing, it's not a people's budget, it's not driven from the people's aspirations, the priorities. If they are the priorities of the people, is that by coincidence? Is that by coincidence of projection scientifically? But it's not a, like, just to simplify, municipality budget. When the mayor will go from what to what, canvassing the budget, and ultimately culminating in a budget that's adopted. But here in your projections, I did see, and I'm not accusing you, because it's the reality. The budget is already there, cast in stone. There's another 2% decline next year and 2% the other year. So this thing about budget, can you demystify us that it's not a technical exercise? It is still a popularly driven process, or it's just a wish on my part, right? Doctor, I forgot now the lady. The Concord, I didn't pick it up to the Constitutional Court to be saying you first complete the other one in terms of the claim, eh? The pre-1998, if I may use that. I didn't pick the Constitutional Court to be saying that. I didn't pick up the Constitutional Court to be giving a certain priority. I thought the Constitutional Court was saying two fundamental things. One, public participation was flawed. It's failing the master, you know, of what would be a people's process. That's what I picked the Concord to be saying. Two, go and define parliament. Go and define priority. So that Concord, in my reading of it, I did read the minute of it. In my reading of it, Concord was not saying it's linear according to time, who came first, first come, first served. I thought Concord was saying, define how you're going to look at priority. You know, there could be a virus spectrum. Now, I don't want to waste time analyzing what could be other contributing factors to prioritization. But in your reflection, I thought you are saying they have now defined priority, which I think, if I got it right, I think I have a different point of view. Then, research report for the research report that you were, can you perhaps share with us the committee support? We're close to the end of term of office. But so that the committee support can then be able to back up and support the next term if need be. Because in 18 months' time or so, we will not be sitting here. So the next term can be, in terms of your research report that you were reflecting on. Basically, those are the issues in addition to what the colleagues have raised, and we give the space to you, Prof, to your team. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. Chair, if I may just suggest that when I'm done, I'm going to hand over to Dr. Nube and Ms. Sasha Peters and Ms. Our Commission Secretary, and then we have to fast track here. I mean, I've got 34 years of access pointed at technology, it's not as fast anymore. there are a lot of points that you and the honourable members have made, which in many ways are comments that we're capturing that, and some of it we're not going to respond to, because some of it is clearly in the domain of political choices and statements that have been made, but also giving us guidance as to how do we deal with these matters. There is a matter that I thought which covers which is quite comprehensive in this instance, is that rurality and rural development in South Africa is extremely complex, from a structural perspective to a functionality perspective. And if you just look at the structural perspective to it, your rural areas, because of the dominance of agriculture, are dependent on agricultural activity, and by implication of that, are independent on tax paid by agricultural farmers. Now if you as a key stakeholder within a rural community pays the lion's share of taxes, it is conceivable. And I don't want to use that phrase that's been used in the domain lightly, but it's conceivable that you will have greater influence over decisions that goes on in a municipality. Because municipal agricultural interest captures decision making within in a rural municipality. And that's a fact. And the people that the majority of people that are poor around us, sometimes what is needed for them doesn't necessarily get driven through because of the lack of disposable income, but also the ability to effectively contribute to the tax collection within that area. Now, the key issue is also that many of our municipalities in the rural areas, districts and others in particular, are economically and fiscally unviable. A classic example is that a rural municipality will get its national transfer from the fiscus on a monthly basis. The lion's share of that money goes into either paying the electricity, paying the staff of the municipality, and then paying the electricity bill to Eskom. And after that, there's nothing left. So I've got no doubt from a finance and fiscal commission that the rural development is constrained. There are lots of rigidities in rural development, and that's part of the painfulness of rural development and what the rural people are experiencing. People that live in the rural area are experiencing. So the decline of that has got to do with a lack of, there's not even the derival principle that we could speak of when it comes to rural areas, because there's so little that's been collected in terms of the citizens relative to commercial farmers and others. So there's the movability of being creative and innovative in rural areas. Clearly there's a reliance on the national government intervention here, and in particular on infrastructure there. So you've seen that there's a coordination problem, and the coordination has got to do with a single window that we know that the rural ministry has been trying, chairperson. Let me just get this one right. The ministry responsible for rural development has been trying all the time. Because it's like a single coordinated focus in terms of the interventions that needs to be made. But that in itself is a challenge, because you've got the most funds for investment, both guide as to what needs to happen, what's appropriate. So think about you pays the pipe, of course, the tune on terms of that. So there's a need to relook at and how we do to cut the silos thing, but find a way of coordination of it. There's also the a lack of coherent understanding. Now, this is not a rural development or land reform department's problem. It is a national discourse problem in the country, and I think we're saying that there's a need to look at that. And then you'll see, as time goes by over the last 5 years, that our citizens in living in these areas are supported. The only income assets they have in many instances are the social assistance programs. And some of them exit the farming areas to rather accept a social assistance grant, because sometimes a social assistance grant is actually far more than what the farmer pays them. Many people don't know this, or many of us ignore this sometimes, but there's still patches in the Western Cape, in other places where there are wine farming and that, where people are still paid by the top system, partially in, partially the other income. So there are lots of issues that need to be sorted out, the complexity around that. So there's this lack of tax, so there's a need for investment into those rural those rural communities as they get to the same stage as where we have in the urban areas. Chairperson, you asked a question about rural development, and other honourable members raised a number of issues around that. I would actually kind of like us to come and do for you a presentation that takes you, that fast track you through three submissions. The one is this one, the other one is the rural development one, and the one is also an infrastructure growth. Because on that we're talking about all these things. So that 3 years, three years of submission, and pull it together into a lens of rural and urban areas. But even when we believe that local government trusts the people, I'm saying to you that some of our local governments don't even have the capabilities. They don't have the economic and fiscal resources. So whoever is sitting at national government and pushing rural development and pushing the way municipalities need to do this, can't, because the fiscus is not there, the tax base is not there. So it goes on from year to year. So there's a need for different types of interventions. And in fact, there's probably a need to relook at our municipality model around that. With the point I was making on the role of legislation, what I was saying to a person is that we only need to be consulted on legislation when it has an impact on other spheres of government. So we're not saying when the executive wants to introduce a piece of legislation, we need to be consulted. But when that legislation has got an impact on provinces, on municipalities, the Financial Fiscal Commission needs to be consulted. But the door is also open for even consulting us on other pieces of legislation, because we could probably help in terms of looking how the costing and pricing is worked out in legislation. Because any legislation introduced needs to be funded. Needs to be supported. So that was the point I was trying to make. On the issue of quality, chairperson and members, in distribution of income, in rural communities, there's no quality. And it's just based on the employment opportunities that's in those areas, public works programs sometimes working, not working. My hobby horse as a citizen of South Africa, I always raised this thing that in the 70s, early 70s, late 70s, there were we had public works programs that municipalities had. We had people cleaning the street, we had people doing the maintenance, people cleaning the, making sure that stuff is happening around graveyards, rural area graveyards are destroyed, and so on and so forth. And the key question, other than giving a view on the different policies introduced from a RDP that was not RDP to a KIA and so on and so forth, a new growth, a SKISA, all that stuff, is that in many ways we need to really look at those decisions taken, if you ask any person to do an analysis for you, those decisions were taken well appropriate at a given time. And it's probably the first 10 years. But now we need to review our policies, our legislation, and see exactly, are we perpetuating inequality? Are we perpetuating poverty? Are we perpetuating a continuous chasm between rural and urban areas? Are policies actually incentivizing people to come to the cities and the cities can't respond to the demand of services and that? And so those are the central issues. So there's no equality in distribution of income in rural areas. In fact, it's quite a problem. On the other issues of largest share of government spending, I'll let the team talk to that. On the issue of unfunded mandates, that's precisely the point that we were making on the need for consultation, especially when functional areas get shifted around. And there's been a little bit in other areas where not this department, but others is not doing the thing that needs to be done. But it's also got to do with how we have not been able to call the bluff on certain things and say, hey, but you have a consult. On the observations of the budget of the rural development, the team will answer to you on that, Chairperson. Contesting the point of land restitution and reform, I think that's a political decision. I think the land issue is so fraught with a different interpretation of how the land matters would be dealt with. But I can't tell you where I come from, because I don't have a constitutional responsibility on this matter. But the land reform issue has been like center stage all the time. And there were decisions made in terms of the RDP at the given moment. You know the answers to that. I can't speak for that, because otherwise it's going to sway us into a political thing. But there are concerns around the whole question of restitution, but also to be able people, our citizens, to be able to maintain and make sure there's a reproductive element in it. There are concerns. So giving me a parcel of land is because of I have the right to claim it. I need to be trained as to what to do with a piece of land. There is a particular history around some areas like the Cavendish Square in Cleveland in terms of how people actually dealt with that. And those lessons need to be captured in terms of that. Economic growth, our economic growth is 0.1%. It's going to be very cold over the next year in terms of having used disposable. So all of that has got constraints to it. And we supported the fiscal consolidation policy approach. But we also at the point where we started to say, but we have to look at differently at the debt ceiling and how the debt ceiling creates better space. But also as to how do we do then, how did we do it to, you know, because we were so battered politically, we're afraid sometimes to talk about issues of rationalization, of restructuring, you know, of redeployment of people that are able to do these things. Because we do have a history of a hotspot of around 14 different administrations, and some people are much more advanced than others. And the truth is that if you worked in the apartheid regime in the past and you're still working in the current state, you got better income assets. People that joined in 94 have better income assets. Your pension, other forms of insurance, and so on and so forth. We think if we don't fix those things, we're going to create some forms of delinquency within South African society. Because when people are poor, they do certain things to support their families. And we need to fix that. On the model issue of development and the points that you're raising on public participation, defined priorities in land reform, we take that on board, Chairperson. And I think what we need to do for you, again, I'm repeating myself on this one, is to give us the opportunity to come and talk to you about what have we presented to the executive on to the parliament. Because we gave this to you as the total of parliament. And we gave you like three sets of recommendations, Honourable Chairperson. Infrastructure, growth, rural development, and our urban development. Because in the urban spec, there's this thing that says that what happens with that area between urban and rural, is some people that famously refer to the peri-urban areas. So we've done that. And the issue is that your committee might not be fully averse to those recommendations. But it's incumbent on the whole of Parliament, because we advise Parliament. We don't have, our first priority is Parliament. So it's incumbent on Parliament, and in particular your committee in this instance, on Lord Chairperson, to look at our recommendations, to say which ones do you like, disagree with, which ones do you want on further information, and then to take it up in your own system and your interaction with the executive. Chair, can I just ask Dr. Nube and Ms. Sasha just to respond quickly to the other points that you've had, that, sorry, that Honourable Members have repeated.
Thank you, Chair. I think there are a few issues to raise. From what you said, almost done just to most of them. There is the issue of, I think I took out this particular report when you asked the issue of the model for rural development, because it is key that it looks at, it's not a blueprint, but it looks at the key drivers for rural development, the range of issues looking at grants, how these grants should be spent. Are we efficient in spending some of these grants which are targeted at rural areas? We find there are some, especially on agriculture, some of the agriculture grants. You ask the question about why is the role of agriculture declining? Some of the grants on agriculture are underperforming and they are not really well targeted. That's one issue. We look at development finance institutions. What is their role in rural development? They should play their role. There is a role there for them. We look at provinces and we find what role should they play. The question was about the budget. What are our observations on the budget for rural development? I think we have not had those slides, but the most important aspect we think is key, the length of issue, as Professor Platt mentioned, that we need that particular program, a good program for poverty, for reducing inequalities. But as we have seen in our figures, that the real growth in the budget for land reform is declining. I think that is a major concern for the Commission. In real terms, it is declining. So, in terms of the overall budget for agriculture compared to other departments, which is within research interrogation here, it's perhaps something we can look at further, how it relates to other portfolios. Then, there was the issue about the wages, that wages are in proportion to core services, wages are very, very high. We have noted that at the Commission. If you look at our previous submission, we looked at the relationship between wages and productivity in the public sector, and we found that there are some junctures. They don't move together. We need to improve productivity as well. So the
question on whether the seems like the budget is already cast in stone as the chair. I think for stability and also for the planning, for planning purposes, we have this 3-year medium-term expenditure framework approach to budgeting. And the outer years are not cast in stone. So depending on the economic climate, if growth is higher than what is anticipated, those outer year projections can be adjusted. I think given the current, as Professor Pike has mentioned, growth of 0.1%, these kinds of projections I think just serve as an indicator to departments that there's a bulk tightening exercise required. On the Concord issue, I think the point is that if the court ruling is going to lead to a reopening up of the claims process, then perhaps we should think of addressing the initial claims that were lodged first. I think that's the point.
So, what's
the
August just want to add something?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to add two practical areas in terms of taking some of the ideas forward. We know that in terms of the resources for funding provinces and municipalities, whereas the Honourable Member rightly pointed that every cent, every piece of soil resides, we're talking about the provincial equitable share and the local equitable share. Now, if you put that in the context of rural development, you're going to struggle to find a component that directly addresses rural development. In other words, it's treated in blanket fashion like any other area. So you have a task or a function to do, but you don't have a corresponding instrument to push that item. So what we've recommended in this booklet is, first of all, if you want to influence provincial equitable share and local equitable share to respond directly to rural development, the third port of call is definitions. What is it that you define as rural development in those spaces? Currently it doesn't exist. There are two schools. Do we put a weight on each of the components making up the provincial equitable share to say this weight, like we do for education and health, they are indicative weights there. Do we come up with an indicative weight that says for rural development our indicative weight is X percent of the equitable share? That's one school of thought. Or do we come up with a component called rural development, which is, in our thinking, where the direction we should be taking. Now, to come up with a component, we've recommended that the department, rural development and land reform, take leadership in roping in Statistics of Africa, agriculture, that's DAF, National Treasury, to come up with this definition that we can use for equitable sharing purposes. And Financial and Fiscal Commission can act as an independent arbiter. We have our ideas on how this should be defined, but it needs to be led by the department to say this is the definition that we are proposing, and that's the definition we are going to use for allocations that then get earmarked precisely for rural development. And it's quite easy to see that the reason why this function is underfunded is because it's not defined. And we know in finance circles, what you don't define, you don't fund. You don't fund say anything if you don't define it. So that's the first thing I mentioned. And that work can be prioritized for the coming financial aid so that it gets into the recommendation for 2019-20 addition of revenue purposes. Then I think Honourable Magasla was talking about issues around access, inequality and poverty, and the Commission is thinking around that. What we have done is a very simple exercise that says, suppose we were to accept the goals and targets in the existing National Development Plan, which are quite profound because they say eradicate poverty. In other words, zero poverty, even within rural spaces, and then reduce inequality, which can be open to any interpretation. But on poverty, you can't open that to any interpretation. It means wherever it is, you reduce that to zero. And we've got projection models that can tell you for each year, starting from 2018 to 2030, what do you need to be doing in this space? And we've worked that model out from 2018 to 2030. What is it that you need to do in terms of the investments that go into that space? By how much they be growing every year, and how far are we from there? And it's the kind of work that we can share with you in other fora. So it ceases now to be an aspiration, but actually says, here are the instruments, and this is how the instruments currently differ from what is needed in the financial framework, and this is what needs to be done. So those are the two practical interventions we can also share.
Honourable members, even if we wanted to tie certain loose points, I guess the time is completely against us. And we have noted your responses there, FFC, led by the Prof, the Chair. Although I've not heard you precisely, but I'll take you during the break on the CASP recap proposition. But I also have some ideas But the analysis is quite useful. The steps you throw around, the relevant steps, the relevant points, you know. The very basics that any state institution should have, you know. The 80-20 split in terms of rural urban, you know. The two-thirds, one-third, the greatest manifestation of poverty. You see, I've internalized now. I don't even look anyway. I just captured it. So it's very, very useful indicator. And perhaps in the premise and proposal alluding to the policy evolution process. In fact, from really 2008, or from China, really 2008, we kept on moving, and shifting fence a bit, and coming back here, coming back there, and so on. We will then end it on the note that you opened it on, that we are doing great disservice to ourselves by not inviting you more often. But I repeat my point. I know ASC can deploy me anywhere, anytime. But the fact is, I've been to sports, I've been to education, I've been to... The fact is, wherever I will go, the fact is the land is a burning issue out there. Finish. Full stop. And therefore, whatever policy proposals, models, fund models and all, they've got to follow that which is the very, very far side out there, you know. So without that correlating with the fund model, I mean the social equivalent, to some extent even subjective. Because this person you are right for, get this hectare that he's saying, then what? His parents out there, growing up, saying, oh, my forefather,
approved, and then that good sales is said, okay, and the minister settles, finalizes, they know I only got you the 2 cents. Now, then so what? Then the next day, for another 10, 15 years, the person will sit only with a rise to this day, and nothing else. So the land question is, now Honourable Binda is not here. There's even a movement that broke from our prophet's daughter. It's called the PAC. We are born out of the land question usually. So the land question is really a very, very fundamental area of focus. And thank you for the pleasing time. I convey ourselves really a chapter institution to the State Department that tells us that the Prince of that National Treasury Prison Committee on Appropriation next day is shut up for all national organization. It's the best situation for the Prince of what is called intergovernmental relations, the chapter 3 of the Constitution. This is what you get when you invite them. Because if they were sitting here and listening, the department is here, FSC is here, Treasury is here, insofar as justice to the portfolio of land and rural development. They could be wiser. The other day we must stand in the house and defend $3 billion that has gone to FAA and not even half a billion gone to restitution or something. So it got to be very, very unfair when people relate with us in the manner that is written here. Right. But thank you very much, Prof. We are humbled and thank you for your humility. you've done it very, very well. You are the greatest winner because of your dynamism, flexibility, and your thank you so much for in fact now also my nickname is football. Thank you very much for coming. And I invite you to come back just outside the main door. I will not define beyond that because sometimes it keeps we have a 5-minute break. We're running slightly behind, but I do know that treasure is not coming, so we'll use that time for something else. But shall we be back here at 12:15, the minute run? Minister, I'm also inviting you to your delegation outside the door, please. Thank you. Honourable Walter, you can close the door from on your way out. Thank you. Thank you. Meeting adjourned for now.